Welcome to the Compass Church podcast and thanks for tuning in. We hope that you enjoy the message that you're about to hear.
Love one another and release people's creativity. So I think to be Christian is to be on that kind of a journey of actually causing people to become who they were always meant to be and never now believe they cannot be so, you know? And I think it's so tragic that we've got a message stuck in our heads that to be Christian is to convict people of sin. Now, sin is an obstacle for people becoming fully human. So we have to deal with sin. This is kind of boomy, isn't it? Can you work on that one? Cheers. Okay, it's kind of, I feel like I'm in a science fiction movie, but you know, that will get better. Okay, so the whole point of our message, true, is that people do have addictions and sins in their lives, but the message that we have is that God loves them and wants to make them whole, rather than it being our job to convict people of sin. In fact, that's God's job. Jesus didn't try to convict anybody of sin. He tried to give people their lives back. And he did a good job of it. And so we're joining in that adventure of actually, God is for you. You just don't know how for you he is yet. But I did talk about four areas of fallenness, that we were created, and the world was created good and great. We were created good and great. And yet we sinned, and so sin is an issue. And we individually left God and started doing our own thing. And the guy's written a book at the moment. He talks about sin as our ability to stuff everything up. Okay? So the fact that we have this innate ability, have anyone noticed it, to do the exact wrong thing? Our instincts work perfectly badly. Have you noticed how that works for you sometimes? Okay, you must be a pretty good lot then. Okay? So the first sin was the eating of the fruit in the garden, which was an individual sin. And then the next sin is a relational sin, where the world systematically is getting worse. We become all about us with the first sin, and now Cain kills Abel, and we have relational sin going on. Then the next stage of sin, as they move further east of Eden, is that they sin all the time. So we've got social sin going on. The whole of society is no longer working. Then the last stage is the building of the Tower of Babel, where we've got now religious political sin, where we've got structured evil that misshapes people. And we see that in our world today, that people really grow up crooked because of the structures in their lives messing them up, the injustice in the world. You know, and the video clip was beautiful. It's a fantastic video clip. I loved it. And this beautiful boy getting misshapen by the social world, this power world that he's growing up in. He's an innocent, but he's living and being misshapen by that. And all of us have been misshapen to some extent, haven't we? God wants to give our true self back to us, that we can stand unashamed with people and with God and be ourselves. And this is the mission we're on. We're giving people their lives back. This isn't something that we should be ashamed of. This is the best thing we can do for our world. Okay, so that's what I tried to talk about last time. Now, I was talking to Joan and she said, you talked about the individual stuff last time. Are you going to talk about how this works together? And I said, you are so onto it, in a manner of speaking. I said, that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the us and what we have to do together. Because nobody really finds Christianity to be credible by looking at one person. They might be just a good person. Most of us didn't become Christians because we saw one person. We saw Christianity working amongst people. For me, it was my parents. I looked at my parents, and even though as a teenager I kind of didn't want a bar of all that, there was something about my parents and other people I knew and the way I saw them living that told me that there had to be truth in this. So we don't get exposed become Christians by being exposed to a message. We become Christians, generally speaking, because we get exposed to people who live the message. And so we have to be something, not just me having to be something. If people are going to really see what this thing is, because It's a message that has to be lived. So I want to do a little bit of sociology this morning and kind of just kind of wing it, and we'll see where it goes, shall we? One of the things that is really weird about being human is that we have no habitat. Now, every species on the planet has a habitat, and if you destroy their habitat, you destroy the species. And apparently, we're losing one species of tree every hour due to the felling of the rainforests. You know, these are trees that haven't even been kind of studied because the rainforests are just disappearing that fast. I'm not sure how quickly we're destroying species of animal, but humanity has this destructive gift, does it not? But we have that destructive gift because of the way we were created, because we were created in the image of God, and so therefore we can make God-like decisions on the earth. That's kind of scary. But it's what the Bible says about us, and we see it happening all around us. Anyway, but you destroy an animal species habitat, and you destroy it. But humans can live anywhere because we have a thing called culture. And so the Inuits in northwest Canada can live on the ice. Now, some of you look adaptable. Mike might be able to do it, but none of us could survive on the ice. I suspect Mike could survive anywhere. I've got this. Anyway, but I know I couldn't. But they have developed a culture over years so that they can survive in extreme cold. Is that fair? Likewise, human beings can survive in extreme heat as well. If you might be a Bedouin wandering around the wilderness, and you've learned how to survive and to manage water and manage your life so you can survive in extreme heat. Isn't that fascinating? The reason is that people live in an environment via culture and technology. Now, I know I did this with the leadership team, so you guys have to keep quiet at this point. So we don't immediately live in the environment. In fact, you guys in Melbourne pretty much ignore your environment other than seeing the occasional tree, don't you? Because this is incredibly urban here. And so you can actually think the land doesn't live, but it lives and breathes, and Christchurch found that out the hard way, you know? We live on the earth is living, and we forget about it. But anyway, some of you have got gardens. Anyone got a good garden here? Yeah. Anyway, so we live in our environment, but we do it via culture and technology. And so the Inuits have got their own culture and their own technology they've developed to live in an environment just as we have. And what happens is, like, Western culture has had its shape for a long time. But what we have experienced in the last century is the huge impact of technological change. Sociologists say that in the last 100 years, something like 20,000 years of social change has occurred. And if you can imagine 100 years ago, the woman would have been washing their hair with borax and egg yolks in a bath that only 14% would own, and there are no showers. There was about 144 miles of paved road in North America, and there were 30 living in Las Vegas. Wow. Okay? Speed limit was 10 miles per hour because the dominant transport was still by horse. And New York was fearing that it would drown in a river of horse poop because they had so many horses in the city limits that they had their stoops. They walked out of the street, you know, that you see the stoops of kind of the big steps, they stepped out to get out of horse poo. Because if the houses were lower, that's not a good thing. Okay? Now, that's the world of 100 years ago. Now, 20,000 years of social change means that we've had a lot of change. Like, we've had the invention of the car, we've had the invention of all of visual technology, communications technology, the works, okay? But we'll just look at the car. How has the car impacted our culture and therefore us? So this is a genuine question. I actually want you to take part here. Sometimes preachers ask rhetorical questions and they really don't want you to say anything, but actually this is genuine. Okay? How has the car changed our lives? How is our life different than it was prior to the car in existence? More?
Stress.
Why more stress? Yeah, okay. So you have to live with crazy drivers and
Pollution?
Yeah, but you can get around better. What does that give you? Phil said time. Is that true?
No.
Now, why? That was an emphatic no. So why is it not true? Why? You're criticizing Phil. Now, be sensitive with him. It's just all right. Right. So you're getting up earlier to get there because everybody's doing it. And how many of you feel like your car is saving you time these days? What do we do with it? So the time that we save going to work, what do we do with it? Yeah, we go to more places, don't we? We think, actually, I'm going here, but I can go there and there. And when I'm there, I can go and see so-and-so. So we actually, the car has enabled us to do more. So it makes us think we get more done, doesn't it? It's just kind of like the labor-saving gift that computers have given us. How much more time we've got now we've got the computer. Yeah, we're really looking at a shorter work week, just like they promised us. But anyway, won't go there. Okay? So we've got the car. We're able to go places. We're able to do more. What else has the car given us? Ability to meet more people. Travel longer distances.
See more places.
So we know the world better. In fact, the car prepared us for globalization, didn't it? We were moving city to city. Now we move country to country, and it's not a big deal because we're used to mobility. What's it done to the family? What's the car done to the family? How's the family been changed by the car? You deliver part. So you used to grow up in a neighborhood, stay there, didn't you? That's why people support football teams so zealously. But now, you think, well, our parents are here, but we can live here because we have a... And we can drive there and it will be all right. And then you end up moving in a different city. But it doesn't matter because we can get there. And so the family gets scattered, doesn't it? Because the car creates a mindset of traveling to rather than being with. So what I want to argue is that we experience now a loss of community purely because of one technological change, the car. Does that make sense? In actual fact, in the morning, some of you who are not using public transport will press the button in your garage, your car door will go up, you'll go to wherever you park your car, you'll go into your work, you'll return home, press the button, go in, and you may not even meet your neighbours. In fact, it's deeply desirable sometimes that you don't. And so you live in a place, but you don't really live in a place. It's just a part of your movement, isn't it? Does that make sense? And so we can actually be deeply detached from our environment, even though we're living there. And so where's your real community, therefore? It's probably work. It's not your neighborhood. And so many of you live in neighborhoods, but you're not really a part of those neighborhoods because you're always going somewhere because of your car life or the life that the car has created for us. Where do you shop? You either shop online or you go where there is... Yeah, because there's car parks. You go where there is car parks. Now where you go is being determined by this invention called the car, which was made to help you, but now it's channeling your life. In actual fact, cities are now planned for cars, not people. So now we have city planners and urban designers who plan so that the car can be happy, even though its people may not. It's fairly true, isn't it? In fact, in Auckland, the traffic's so bad, they've just recently removed a neighbourhood, a very traditional neighbourhood, because it's in the way of the new motorway. And so they had to get rid of it. But, hey, city planning, car rights over people rights any day. But anyway, I just don't want to be cynical, sorry. Anyway, so this whole thing means that we are being changed. So our community has changed because of the car. The way we think has changed, so we think about movement. People will go to a church across town rather than to a community church because we can go to what is best for us. Now, that means that we live scattered lives because our children aren't going to go around their friends who go to that church or whatever. But we're always travelling, we're always moving, and we have been changed by this. Does this make sense? Now, I want to introduce another type of social change that we experience as well, and that's the cultural shift that we've been through in the Western world, probably about since the 12th century. And so this is a kind of broad sweep of history and social thought done in 5 minutes, okay? There is a pre-modern society, modern and post-modern are the key sociological terms for the kind of worlds that people live in today. And and what I want to talk about is the pre-modern world, the traditional society, and you know, I've been to Malaysia, to the longhouses in Malaysia, and they live together, they share everything together, they have the same values, that's what they've always done. So have any of you visited a traditional society like village in Fiji? The thing that's marked about these kind of environments is they don't change. They are shaped by the past. And they have a big story that they share that gives their life meaning. Our ancestors have been here, they passed on this way of life, and this is where we're going. And so the past shapes the big story, and they have a community, they sit around the campfire, they cook together, they live together, everybody knows each other. Your family is there, you would never leave this community. Okay, it's a big deal to leave. And lastly, there is a spirituality that they share that gives them a way of life. So the values that they hold are exactly the same as each other because they're not being impacted by outside forces. Okay? Now these societies last ad infinitum. Have you noticed that? They're incredibly stable and resilient because they have a community that passes on a way of life and a way of belief. Now, an invention happened in the West which changed all this. It was the invention of the printing press. Now, prior to this, children had grown up in the workforce. As soon as they were 7, they entered the adult world of work. Okay? So, you know, you see the paintings and the children are a part of the adult world. And when the printing press was invented, it meant literature for the first time was available to everybody, not just the rich. And the adult world began to change. So you had to be able to read to succeed. And so the printing press led to the family educating their children, and we had the birth of modern education. Okay, so this started from the 15th century on. So schools started to emerge because children had to learn to read to succeed in life. And another thing happened called French Romanticism, and it was kind of decided that it was a really quite a good idea for parents to love one another and love their children. Now, this would seem to have been a good idea, but long before that, marriage changed as a result of that. And love became important, loving your children. And so what's called the modern family emerged. And they invested themselves in their children and said, you can make a difference in the world. And this kind of nuclear family that shaped their children caused the children to go and do things like create businesses. to explore the world. And so we had the invention of inventing. It became normal to create the future. Industrialization, factories emerged, colonization happened. The Western world took over everything and colonized, Christianized, did all sorts of things in the whole world. Everyone kind of noticed that stuff? And it all happened because of these children got attention and they became individuals. So guys like Benjamin Franklin, here I am. No, God helps the man who helps himself. What an idiot thing to say. But, you know, it's like, it's about me. If I help myself and get on with it, Martin Luther, here I stand, I can do no other. And so we got the invention of the individual. And this society is based on the future and making the future happen. And so it's driven by a big story called progress. We've got to make the future happen. We've got to create a better world. And the idea that undergirds that, which emerged at the start of the 20th century, is evolution. The philosophy of evolution is much more important than the science of it. We're going somewhere, we're moving towards being a higher species. The fact that nobody believes that anymore is incidental. Nobody can believe that progress is real anymore, but that's because we've shifted cultures now. So community got reduced to the nuclear family. Used to be the extended family, but in the modern world, with the invention of the printing press, strengthening of the family, we end up with the nuclear family. So community as we know it is reduced to the single thread of marriage and a married couple who bring up their children. And lastly, spirituality got lost in this period and religion became something that you did on a Sunday and did not invade the rest of your life. Everyone remember that kind of stuff? So, you know, you don't mix church and politics. You don't mix church and anything, actually, and you definitely don't let your faith affect your business or the decision-making in life. So this whole future-orientated society didn't want ethics to limit progress. And so making money, getting power was all that counted, okay? So this was caused by two changes, a change in family, the nuclear family, and a change in technology, i.e. the printing press. Now, the culture that we now live in is sometimes called postmodern culture. Some people don't like that, but what it's saying is that the modern world has unraveled and now we're in something different to that. The world of progress is gone. In fact, nobody's very sure of what progress looks like anymore. And a guy called Jean-Francois Lyotard, imagine that guy at Mike's gym. That would be really unfortunate. Mr. Lyotard, nice to have you as a membership in our gym. Okay, anyway, he wrote a book and he said post-modernity is, his phrase was incredulity towards the meta-narratives. What he means is that nobody believes the big stories anymore. So we've got a change in belief about belief. We actually, in postmodern culture, we believe that nothing is true, but it might be true for you. Okay? So the most patronizing thing that anyone can say to you is, I'm really glad that works for you. I'm really glad that's true for you, because they wouldn't criticize you, but what they're saying is, you're psychotic, really. You live in your own little reality, and, you know. And so the big story is lost, and we all have to make up our own little story to give our lives meaning. So what makes life meaningful? Well, probably nothing, because we think that nothing is true. The second thing is the loss of family. And again, there is a change in family and a change in technology that really opens up this new epoch of history. And the change in the family was, as late as 1960, less than 1% of marriages ended in divorce. Okay, within 20 years, it was up to 40%. Now we live in a situation where half marriages end in divorce. But here's the thing. Most relationships don't go to marriage. So we're in a realm of profound relational chaos that has never been experienced before. That it is normative to have no formal commitment in relationships now. Okay? So children are growing up sometimes with one parent, sometimes with two parents, but maybe not the two parents that they were born to, natural parents. I dealt with this guy. He said, I've got now four families of origin to work with. So his parents both re-entered relationships and those split, and he's got relationships with all those people. That's a heck of a thing. That makes it very hard for you to believe that there is one truth, one way, when your whole life has been spent going from home to home and managing the different values that exist. Does that make sense? And so people grow up in that kind of relational chaos, and it's very hard to believe that there's order and meaning when you live from adult diaries. Okay, I'm with Dad this weekend. I'm with Mum this weekend. Now that he's remarried, and now I've got to live with my stepbrother, sister, who he seems to love more than me. And we don't get a sense of who we are, and we actually don't pick up a value system or a belief system because we're always juggling the multiple belief systems and value systems that we're having to live in just in our homes, and then there's the world that impacts us, and then there's the technological change that happens, which is visual technology. Now, in this former epoch, we had to learn how to read to access the adult world. Unless you could read, you couldn't read anything naughty. Unless you could read, you couldn't learn. But now in this new world, we can look at television and pick up everything we need to know for life. We can access the adult world and learn all about it. We can access other people's lives. At the click of a button, we can enter any kind of informational zone we want to through the internet. And so once you had to learn how to read and learn to enter the adult world, now we can enter it at will. Does that make sense? And so there is no need to mature. Now the theory was that visual learning would be really great for our children. But here's the thing, you can't process images. When you read a book, you have to follow somebody's logic. But how many of us have actually been able to process that picture of the plane hitting the Twin Towers? I still don't know what to do with that, what that says about humanity. I don't get the politics of that. But in that one image, there's a whole realm of emotion, isn't there? And you can't process it. And so kids who grow up in the visual world end up with everything being thrown at them and no ability to process it. Let's think, what's the last thing you learnt from television? And you don't, because you don't process. Visual technology happens to you and you're impacted by it, but you don't actually learn from it, you're shaped by it. And so we get to enter other people's lives, other people's worlds, purely because of visual technology. We know how everybody lives. So postmodernity is kind of exposure to otherness, and when we get hitting these all these worlds that come at us, I grew up with my three sons. That was probably kind of and get smart. But now people's view of family is kind of as much shaped by American Father and The Simpsons as anything. I wish that wasn't true, but I actually think it's true. And so people's visual world impacts them, shapes their values, and relativizes the values and creates a spirituality, a way of life. Now, to be postmodern is to be skeptical that anything is true, that anything is relationally solid, and that there is a way of life. So everybody out there is trying to figure out their own story. They want to be known for their own story, and they want to create their own family or community around themselves, and that's the importance of the cell phone and Facebook. You know, the research shows that Gen Ys look at Facebook 5 times a day. Okay, some of you, anyone more? You can wave. Okay. because we feel so detached, the technology gives us a sense of connection. Okay? Now, these three things provide us with things. Big story provides us with faith. Sorry. Wrong one. Something to believe in, a hope. This gives us a horizon to look forward to. A big story means this whole thing means something. And so in our world, we have a loss of hope and subsequently meaning. People live their lives but aren't sure if anything means anything anymore. Okay? Second thing, without a community, we don't feel loved. And I've met people, postmoderns, who really put a lot of work into maintaining their virtual community desperately. Texting, Facebooking. Someone the other day said to me, I feel so loved when someone puts a post on my Facebook page. You ask people how they feel when people post up, because what if nobody posts? What if nobody gives you likes? So community gives us love, and people are under pressure to create their own community. And lastly, spirituality is about having a faith to live by and a way of life. That means that we're not always thinking, what should I do? How do I do this? Because we actually have a way of life. And this is a discipleship issue, and that's why discipleship courses are really important, because becoming a Christian is just saying hello to God. The key is getting a way of life. To be a Christian is to enter a way. That's what the church was first called. It was called the way, because it's a way of life, and this is this whole issue of spirituality. And we pick this up via community. Now, this is why I'm a fan of church and why I think we can't communicate the gospel without talking about church. Because without a community, the community disseminates the big story and it disseminates a spirituality just by being amongst it. Because you go out to this world out here and it just, the acid wash of the world leaches away hope, faith and love. Just leaches it out of you, doesn't it? The minute you go out into the world, Monday morning, you're doing a commute, you're looking around, nobody is talking to one another, you're in a world of silence. Well, heck, you might as well just get a little bit of your kind of iPhone going so that you're ticking away there. So you've got a world. You've got a world you're a part of, and it's got nothing to do with these people. Although, if you have a friend, you might show them what you found. Okay? That's what two people were doing in front of me yesterday when we were on the tram. There was two guys who were obviously friends, and they were both on their iPhones, and they're saying, and it's just like, this is community as we know it. Anyway, so through community, these two things get passed on. Now, so what I am arguing is this, that to be about reaching people is to be about hospitality and invitation. Because Christianity becomes believable when you see it and you're part of a community. And so it used to be that we tried to communicate, you believe, then behave, and then maybe you just might belong. But we were really good at pointing the finger at how people weren't behaving, or what belief they should have, because there's right belief and wrong belief, and if you don't have the right belief, you are on the outer. But what I want to suggest is that we kind of change the order, because for most people who are on their journey, they need to belong first. And we may have to be really accepting of people in our lives who don't know how to behave. But the last thing that changes might be their ability to actually behave. Because as they belong, they will slowly come to believe and pick up a way. But that may take ages before they behave. Now, Christianity is all about transformation, but our transformation comes from experiencing the way of life together. And that's why the church has to be deeply relational. And the message that we share can't be, if you accept Jesus in your life, God forgives your sin, and hey, hunky-dory, you know how to do things. In fact, if they become a Christian, they have no idea how to do things. In fact, you do them a disservice if you lead them to God before they experience community. Because they're living out in the world there, and everything in that world leeches faith, hope, and love right out of them. So we need to create a microclimate that grows human beings. It's called the church. And part of reaching people is invitation into rather than talking to. And that's why the church is God's answer. Because God has always understood that truth by itself isn't enough. Word by itself isn't enough, but it's the word made flesh in community, in real people, that works for people and changes their lives. And so the other element, which I haven't touched on here, I'll just add it to, the postmodern now lives in the now. The past is irrelevant, the future is gone, and so all we do is live now, and we buy stuff to make us feel good. It used to be, I believe, therefore I am. It became, I think, therefore I am, thanks to Descartes. Now it's, I buy, therefore I am. And we actually often have more in common with those who buy the same things as those than those who believe the same things. You think about it. Just bring out your new latest iPhone or whatever and just see who hangs around you. Okay? There's this attraction to things now. And business's achievement is our life is now defined by things rather than relationships. So we find ourselves in this world, seeking to reach people in this world. And the thing I want to say, that the best thing that we have got to give people is us. Okay? Now, I'm not saying we're perfect. In fact, we're pretty dysfunctional, aren't we?
Yep.
But together we are something. Because God's plan for the earth was never me. Now, I'm special, just as you're special. Just say, I am special. But you're not that special. You are not the answer. We are the answer all together with the Spirit living amongst us. Okay? And so inviting people into here can make God believable. Because people start to see, oh, there's a way of life. There's a way you guys treat each other. You actually love, you serve, you help each other move house. You do this, you do that. And you're actually doing it for me. I'm not even really in yet. See, because if we aren't relational, but we march to the beat of the city, we have nothing to offer. And unfortunately, the church has followed the world in modernism. Have you noticed how churches are now run like businesses? It's all about progress. It's all about the vision statement. It's all about the church leader as CEO, ruthlessly organized to achieve outcomes. We will be the biggest church in the city. Okay. God has said. I'm sure he has, often. But anyway. And it's all about order and control, so we have systems and we have a machinery to achieve the vision that Jesus has given us. Obviously, you've noticed that I really, really believe this model. I think that the church followed the world into the world. Now, I think post-modernity is our opportunity to redefine ourselves as a community. Because the thing that we have to be and that the modern church can't offer is community. Because the modern church is a meeting. Whereas we, I believe, are called to offer people a family. Because if we don't offer family, we don't offer transformation. Because anyone can go to a meeting and leave. They can even pay their money in, but they're not a part of it. They attend. Now, you're here because you sense something of the reality of community here. But you can still just turn up on a Sunday. And if you, that's all you do, if you never really give yourself to being family, the thing about it is it actually costs you time, doesn't it? And in our heads, we don't have that time, do we? Because we're really marching to the beat of the city drumbeat. And so it's really demanding to give ourselves to being together, forming genuine relationships and friendships, and going on pilgrimage together. But I'll tell you what, you will look back and think, what the heck have I got in my life? Because the acid wash of the world just takes everything away. And what you'll find is can't believe anything, not sure if this Christianity thing is true. I've been to the meetings and yeah, it's just not real. And the reason is we find reality together in genuine relationships as our lives get changed by each other and we face ourselves and we change by the grace of God, by the power of the Holy Spirit. And so I want to suggest to you that as a community, that if we are going to give the world something that's a genuine alternative lifestyle, it's centered on family. It involves passing on a big story so people have some kind of hope and meaning for their lives. And so we have a big story to tell. And the thing I want to say is you can't tell it in a 5-minute gospel pitch. It cheapens the gospel. Now that to say, some people really just desperately want to know God, and you can pray with them any time, but just tell them you're only saying hello, you haven't got it yet. To say the sinner's prayer is to say hello to God. That does not mean that you get anything. But all of us started where we started, didn't we? And then the challenge is how to bring them into the life and reality of God, and that involves discipleship and people learning a way of life through being in a community of faith and the discipleship tracks that are available through being in the small groups together, all that sort of stuff. But also the preaching and so on is about the big story that we're a part of, that God created a good world, that the world is fallen and broken, that God's rescue plan involved forming a nation that would allow him to birth his own son, Jesus, in the world. And he would demonstrate what a fully human life was like. And the thing I want to emphasize is the life of Jesus meant everything. It's not just his death. Jesus actually showed a way of life by his life. Jesus didn't come to die. He came to live. And his dying was a consequence of his living. But it wasn't the point. The point was he showed what a human being could be and should be and what we are called to live like. And then he died and rose again so that we could receive his spirit and be the answer to the world. That's our story. It's a darn good story, I think. It's a better story than I can become self-actualized. Or I can achieve karma and enlightenment. That's all about I. We're about a big story that involves every one of us in God's story on the planet. That's a good story. Okay? So, strike. It's about time I finished, is it? I haven't got quite as far as I wanted to. And I actually haven't got past page 3. I've been rambling on about this because I feel like we're born into a change point in history. The modern church has reached its full zenith in the mega church. Okay? And we see them all around Melbourne and wherever else in the world. And they are great and they're doing great things. But they are an organization. And I think God's dreamed of a family. If you look at the Old and New Testament narrative, it's all about the formation of a people of God who live their promises, who live to love and serve and be authentic Christ representations to each other and to the world. We live to be a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. That's who we're called to be. And I want to encourage you as a church to live a life worthy of that. And it will involve you being less busy in some zones of your life so that you actually have time for community, because community takes time. And relationships and people take time. And the litmus test of whether we're getting this is whether anyone is invited into our homes. I really want to encourage you to not lose your home being the center of your faith. Because when you invite somebody into your home, whether it's from this community or someone who's in your workplace or your neighbor, they actually get impacted by a way of life. I'm probably a Christian today because my mother experienced that kind of family when she was young. And she wanted to have a Christian family, and she wanted to have a way of life that she saw. And she'd never seen it till that point. You could be the first stop-off point for somebody seeing something different in this world. Okay? So I want to encourage you to... Actually, should I say something about social space? Do you want me to finish off on that? Would that help? Yeah. Okay. I'll just close off on this. And thanks for sticking with me, because I've talked quite a bit. I appreciate. But I was told it was allowed, so, you know. People come into community in different ways, and I'll just finish off on this because it's quite an important concept. Some of you came to this church and you walked into the place and you felt like you belonged. There was something about the values and the way this impacted you that you really felt like you belonged, and that's belonging in public space. Now, this happens all around the place. We find our belonging in the big. So some people, for some reason, support footy teams and feel deep identity in that. Now, there is no logical reason why we find belonging in that way and buy their jerseys and wear them and even go to football matches and buy season's tickets when we know they're going to break our heart. See, but we belong through the concept of what they are and through our history. Who knows how it forms, but it forms, doesn't it? And so so that's public space. So sometimes people walk in here and think, I found home. I know where I belong now. And you think, how did that happen? Because some people come for 3 years and never feel like they belong. But those people belong in public space. Then there's a thing called social space. And other people find their belonging that way. And so when people move to a new town, say, where do they go? Sports club, pub. Was that a pub? But yeah, sports clubs are true. Pubs are the same. You find a local, say, and you hang out there and hopefully get to know some people, make some mates. It would seem a simple way to make mates would be to shout around. That's if you're desperate for friends. Sports clubs are the same. You're interested in a sport. You join the sports club. You get to know some people playing a team. You bond. You get a life. Schools operate like this too. Often, say, new to a city, mums are dropping off kids. They always take the kids in, not just because they want to make sure their kids are safe. They're hoping they'll meet people. And say you're a new mum, you might go to a play group, not because you necessarily want to go, but you're looking for people who are also at home, alone with their children, because you're in a new stage of life, and you're looking for friendships. And so social space is unstructured space, where you can go and meet people and decide whether you want to know them anymore. Because most of the people you meet in social space, you won't invite home with you. Especially if it's at the pub. You won't want them to come into your life, but in social space, you can choose your friendships. And most people form their friendships in social space. Okay? Personal space is the next one. And this is more... this is a tighter group. And so, generally speaking, in personal space, you know these people and you might meet regularly with them. It might be like I've got three guys who I have coffee with every week. That's very personal space for me. And it's a high-level commitment for me to every week do that. It's a real priority, though. They become real friends, okay? But so personal space is moderately structured. Now, in church, we do have personal space. We don't have a lot of social space, okay? Personal space we have a lot of. Small groups, like some of those courses are personal space. Now, if you go to them, you'll think, I don't know anybody. Why would I want to go to that course? Well, if you go, you actually might know some people. So just if you can get over that fear and go, you actually, but it involves a thing called this is the big evil. And in a postmodern world, is a commitment is something you have until you might get a better offer. Yeah, I'm coming. That's going on. Sorry, commitment ends. Now, so some of you thought 8 weeks, like that's going to happen. Now, but if you're with this group for 8 months journeying, eight months, heck, that's practically a murder sentence, but in our enlightened world. Yeah, but anyway, in personal space, it involves commitment because we are going to become part of something that's a bit more formal. Now, the last one is intimate space, where this might be with, this is genuine friendship, and these people thoroughly know our lives now. Okay? So, for some of us, that might only be one person. Might be two or three. But by and large, this kind of stuff is mysterious and just doesn't happen with some and it happens with others. You know, and in your life, your life actually gets defined by the friendships you walk with. You can look back in a period of your life and you think, when I was a teenager, they were my friends and that defined my life. Okay? Now, what I want to suggest is that a Christian community needs all these spaces because people belong in different ways. Some people will come in and find belonging straight away. Some will need this. And so 10 years after they've been in the church, I still don't feel like I belong. And the reason? They don't have a friend. Okay? So church life needs to be able to provide these opportunities. I want to suggest that you work on this one. Social space is really important. And often the only time that when we meet together, it's structured and meeting orientated. I kind of have this phrase, less meetings, more eatings. You know? Because social space generally works when it works well around food. I sense converts here. One of the interesting things is I did a seminar not long ago and I said to them, what was the center of church life in the early church? And I said, if you're an Anglican, it was the Eucharist, breaking bread, what we did this morning. If you're a Pentecostal, it was worship. If you're a Baptist brethren, it was the preaching of the word. And I said, all of those were wrong. I actually think the centerpiece of the early church was the meal. It became known as the love feast. And when they broke bread, they had a meal. And Paul fights all of Romans so that they keep the meal that Jew and Gentile have together because that makes them one people. Jesus said, when you eat and drink, remember me. See, so we're meant to remember Jesus over food because that's life. I mean, we do this once a week, don't we? This isn't life. Your life isn't like this. But when you leave here, you're going to eat food and you can remember Jesus with the people you're with. The center of Christianity is the meal and your ability to include others at the meal table. And then they really belong when they eat with you. And so that ladies' night this Friday, the kind of track pants event. Sounded more exciting than the guys' night. That just sounded like a meeting to me. But anyway, I'm welcome to go. Thanks. Is there going to be food there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be food at the guys' thing. See, that's a bit of sales pitch. See, and when you go to that Friday night thing, it's that kind of a night. That's social space. You can invite whoever you like. And it's not about this kind of a meeting, because for somebody who's new, this is quite a hard, challenging meeting to be at, especially listening to someone like me. Whereas you bring them along to a movie night, everyone's just having fun. They can get to know people, and it costs no anxiety. You see, and so when you create space like that, just don't think about this community. Think about who's the person who you're friends with. This is great space to invite them into. And so as a community, we are all about inclusion. And keep in mind that most people feel an outsider all their lives. And we've got to become the great includers, because there's a whole bunch of people who are looking for the family they never had. You know, the deep brokenness that exists is because we have lost the things that we needed to make us into the human beings we were always meant to be. But you can be the family that creates hope, faith, and love in people just by being you all together. Just close in prayer. Lord, today we just want to thank you that you made us to be together, to love people. And we love it when we really connect with people. There's something about us that comes alive when we really connect with people. And Lord, help us to live this in the world, in a world where people haven't got family. In a world where people haven't got a big story, they haven't got a way of life to live by, they're living on their nerves. So many people are in high levels of anxiety, live in high levels of rejection, live in high levels of addiction. Lord, help us to be us in the world, and help us to be inclusive and welcoming and hospitable in a world which is excluding and harsh. Lord, as a church, may this place be just wild with acceptance and wild with hospitality, and may they eat together a lot. And Lord, teach us just how to remember you as we eat together. So Lord, help us to remember that our message is not just a message. It's not just words. Our message is a life. It's a life together, and it's a life of welcome. So Lord, as we reach people, as we are Christians in this world, help us to not just try and find words to express it. Help us to express it by our actions of inclusion, of giving worth to people, of serving others. Help us to be like you, Jesus. Amen. God bless you all. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. We trust that you've enjoyed the message. For more podcasts, head to www.compasschurch.com.au.